The world will bring to you exactly what you ask for, and make sure you leave nothing out. It almost reminds me of that movie Bedazzled, when he has like a really small penis, and then he's like, she's like, "Well, I didn't know I had to ask for that."
Welcome to Burning Out.
Okay, what's up, guys? We are in heaven. Just kidding. You know where we are. We are in hell. And I have another incredible female comedian on the line. Real quick, before we go to hell with Manon, I just want to have a quick moment to say thank you. I've been getting the sweetest, nicest, coolest, amazing messages from you guys supporting Burning in Hell. Don't forget, rate, subscribe, review. I love the DMs, but the devil will thank you if you help Burning in Hell on the podcast charts. I love you guys so much. It just makes this so much more fun to do. It's like my passion project, and I love my little devils. Also, Wednesday, November 18th, Friendsgiving with Hannah Berner is a virtual show with all my best friends. We have Ashley Heseltine, Amanda Batula, Paige DeSorbo, Taylor Strecker, Andrew Collin, Ellie Schnitt, my boyfriend Des Bishop. Get tickets, link in bio in my Instagram and in the description. Friendsgiving with Hannah Berner. It's $10 a ticket. November 18th. It's going to be so fun. And let's go interrogate Manon now. Thank you so much for coming through.
Thank you for having me. Like a robot. I don't know why I sound like a robot, but well, thank you for having me.
You're actually one of our first ever Vine stars to come to hell.
Hey,
you're
oh, that's
one of those,
definitely not true.
You're one of,
they've no, all been in hell.
No, but you have one of those like bazillion loops on Vine, and then you are actually like a real comedian in that. I mean, I hate to say like real and fake, but like you've done actual research at the Groundlings, Upright Citizens Brigade, Second City Conservatory. Like this is some like fancy shit. You're a content creator. You're an author. You're a podcaster. You have so much shit going on, and you're actually perfect for this podcast, because you're also really into mental health and making people
laugh.
Oh
yeah, that's my jam.
And this is a mental health comedy podcast, so the fact you haven't been on is actually upsetting to me, but here you are.
I'm angry already. I'm going to get fired up.
Hell yeah.
You know.
I hope. Yeah, let's get fucking into it. You have some exciting stuff happening in your career right now. Can you explain, like, I know there's a book and there's...
Yeah, I mean, I love that you brought up on... No one ever talks about that anymore, that I was on Vine. So I love that because I loved Vine so much. It's like where everything started on my social media career. I've since then moved to like Instagram and Facebook. And yeah, I do have a background in comedy and improv and stand up. And so that kind of like helped facilitate a lot of my comedy videos, is like combining the two worlds. And, you know, then I got married and did the whole New York thing, and life kind of blew up in my face. And I was like, okay, well, I have to take it to the next level. And yeah, so I wrote a book this year. I have a podcast out. Those are kind of the two things. Those are the two big things in my life this year, whilst continuing to, you know, TikTok and Instagram.
This book sounds very interesting because it says that you were routinely embarrassing yourself in improv classes, doing stand-up comedy, but being unrelentlessly dedicated no matter how embarrassing your life was. And then you had a life-altering night out that forced you to change your ways. Now, I don't want you to give away anything you can't give away, but what are you talking about?
Well, I used to really love the alcohol. I would overconsume it quite a bit, but I didn't know I was overconsuming it. I just was like, this is what I'm used to. I'm used to
You're
having
like, I'm good at drinking.
Yeah, I really love it. It makes me feel good. It makes me happy. It's the one thing that I look forward to in the week. Mm-hmm. And there was many nights out that were like very embarrassing, but there was one in particular that really humbled me enough to where I really looked within myself and went, you know what? I want to be able to be this wacky, goofy, funny, connected person without a drop of alcohol. Like for some reason, that was like my dream. Cause I saw my friend do it, and like, she seemed so comfortable, sober out in the world. And I was just like in awe of her. And I was like, at some point, one day that'll be me. But like not right now, because I love alcohol and I love dancing on tables or whatever and getting smashed. And so everything kind of collided.
You were doing comedy?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was during kind of like it all kind of came to a head during Second City, which was my first intro to improv. Mm-hmm. So I was in my early 20s. So I've never performed drunk, drinking, under the influence of anything. I've never done stand-up. I've never done improv shows with anything in my system.
People
I don't know
do
how
it,
that's
it's
possible.
Hard. It's not recommended. It's very difficult. If I did it, I would like fall asleep on stage.
Oh my God. I think I would be the funniest person on the planet. So I feel like the world's just waiting for it.
But you wouldn't remember how funny you were.
I wouldn't, and I probably wouldn't be as funny, but in my head, I would be a scream.
It's like when
scream.
You're dancing. You're like,
yeah.
I am Beyonce.
And then
why
it cut to
there a
it,
circle
like,
around me right now? And people are like, no, you're getting reported. It's a circle of bouncers yeah. taking you
yeah,
out.
Yeah, these are all policemen circling you. Yeah. And so, yeah, I knew I wanted to be this like brave soldier. I don't know, soldier. Brave human, courageous woman in the world without alcohol. And the time finally came when I was like, you know what? Enough's enough. And yeah, I stopped drinking. I think it was 2012.
How old were you?
And then I was 23. Uh-huh. And I, you know, I could have easily not, like, I could have easily been like, oh my God, I don't drink every day because I didn't. Oh my God, I don't drink in the morning because I didn't. Mm-hmm. So like, is it that bad? You know what I mean? But for me, it was that bad. It was like, I knew that there was something else in this world that was calling to me. And I guess it was sobriety, and I started like really soul searching and becoming this spiritual junkie where I was reading all these books and going to Marianne Williamson and watching Brené Brown and mm-hmm. you, Tony Rott, all these things. It was like, oh my God, I really like growing. I really like looking at my wounds and healing them and feeling more connected and more comfortable in my body. I kind of got like addicted to it. And it wasn't until like I fully got, I guess, sober or clean or clear in my mind that like stand up even came into my brain as an option, if that makes sense. Like I was doing improv schools, whatever, and it was fun. But like it wasn't until I was like 6 months sober that I was like, oh, maybe stand up's an option. Like all of a sudden I had this new courageous and this new bravery that I didn't have before and this new comfortability in my skin that I never had before. And it was like a year in that Vine happened. So I really think that my whole life began once I cleared all the poison out of my body.
It's also amazing because getting sober and doing stand up are almost similar in that it is so vulnerable and you have to like just put yourself out there completely. You just feel naked on stage expressing your feelings and being judged. But when you, I like to go back to when people were children. How does this make you feel as a child? When
yeah,
you were
where
a
did
kid,
all this, the demons start?
But
where did
were
all this
you a
trauma?
Goofy, outgoing kid?
Kind of. So at times I was, mm-hmm. and at times I was very shy. Mm. I was like an only child. And so I was really shy. I didn't talk to anybody. But with my friends, I would be very, very goofy to the point mm-hmm. where I remember in third grade, I had a friend that said I should be a comedian. And I think I was like, okay, just like took it and ran with it. But like I would like make my friends laugh at the movie theater. I would be like outrageous and do weird stuff with shopping carts mm-hmm. and they loved it. And so I was like, great. But I wasn't always goofy with everyone. I had to feel very safe and yes. comfortable and like
because
supported.
Society isn't necessarily open to women being really goofy, outlandish, and taking up a lot of space. And I love the word goofy. Like I would consider myself very goofy. And I think I remember like years ago seeing your videos online and like almost seeing that another goofy girl like you and being like, if she could be goofy and own it, like I could be goofy. Because so many people have that side to you, but then it's the years of society being like, no, you have to act like this, and like that's not appropriate. And next thing you know, you're boring or you're not feeling like yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. When we all have a goofy side to us, I mean, I can't say we all, but a lot of us have it within us. And when we see somebody else behaving that way, it gives us permission to do the same, which is why we need more and more people shining their light rather than dimming it.
Yes. Now, kind of controversial question. I've had very bad bouts of depression, anxiety, and in my like darkest times, I would go on Amazon and buy like 20 self-help books. How much self-help do you think is helpful versus just kind of like an industry, maybe like people trying to take advantage of people who are like lost?
Oh, so interesting that you say it like that. I am too trusting, so I never think that... You'll hear about that in a little bit. So my brain does not think, oh, anyone's out to get me. I don't think anyone's taking advantage, and therefore I have been taken advantage of. So especially with the marriage story that I will tell you. So, you know, that's interesting. Like, I've actually had a couple of people, acting coaches in particular, be like, okay, stop reading a self-help book and read an actual, like, book with a story. Get lost in a story. You're focusing too much on your mental health, and it's now hindering your play, and it's getting in the way of your imagination. And that is that's absolutely felt so true for me, where it's like, I actually had someone the other day say it. This kid, he's 21 years old, and he's this crazy, wacky TikToker, whatever. He goes by Suburban Prince, and he goes, man, and what do you do all day? Cause I'm not, you know, I don't make videos all day. Like, a lot of people are like, I wake up and I make videos. Mm-hmm. Like, I will make a video once every 2 weeks when I feel like it.
When you feel inspired.
Yeah.
I'm similar.
And I'm like, and he's like, man, and I'm not a robot. You could be doing so much more. You wake up to meditate. And I was like, well, yeah. Cause like, if I don't meditate, if I don't do breath work, if I don't write my feelings down in a journal, I feel like I'm scared of what will happen. Like, I won't be okay, right? Like, that depression or anxiety will come through, and I'll snap at some, like, I don't know. And so I'm so used to just, like, filling my whole world with mental health and self-help so that, like, I feel peaceful and comfortable and connected in the world. And he's like, man, and if you're living your passion and you're making videos, you won't need to meditate every damn day. And for some reason, even though, like, for some reason I really heard that, I was like, you know what? If I was dancing and doing more things that brought me joy, maybe I wouldn't need so much meditation, if that makes sense. So I do think that there's a healthy balance in there.
Sometimes,
where it's like, can you meditate and make a
thing?
They do. I was
They're
like,
a little
dude,
too fucking real with you. I'm like, okay, you don't even pay taxes, so let's calm it down.
Exactly.
I do think that there's a beauty in, like, a balance of things. And that, like, I do love meditation, but I also think that, like, you could meditate for it. I don't want to bring up cults. However, have you heard of the, like, Nexium stuff? There's basically this cult. It always starts with, like, self-help, but then it turns into all these, like, type A people who end up just being obsessed with this cult and, like, their growth within this cult, and they quit their jobs and they're just all invested in this cult. And it's like, at some point you're like, wait, but you lost what brings you joy and your, like, original dreams and all that. I'm not saying you're in a cult, because you're not. But it just shows how I do think some of the self-help stuff, like, when you're paying, like, hundreds of dollars for these, like, programs and all this stuff, at some point it's like, are you just losing money and being taken advantage of, versus you taking what you need from it and then just enhancing, like, what you love to do?
Yeah, I think there's a healthy balance. I see no issue with spending money on, I've spent thousands of dollars on self-help and coaches, and I need that, because left to my own devices, I could rest on my laurels very easily and not do a damn thing, because I'm comfortable in the world. Yeah. So sometimes I do need that outside person to be like, okay, man, and let's create a game plan. And, you know, time's not free. Like, you know, you also value what you pay for. And so if it was all free and you just do it, people would be fine. But people are not thriving. People are depressed and they're anxious and they do need help. And I do need help. You know what I mean? And so to spend a little money on yourself is a really good thing. But to overdo it and to fill your life with only that and to lose what brought you joy, not so much. So there's got to be a healthy balance, right? But I think it gives people, I don't know what Nexium is, but I know what all the other... I've definitely heard about a lot of experiences where they start devoting all their time to that. And I think it's just another, it's like one addiction to the other. It's just like, well, this is bringing me joy and connection. Like, they're getting something from it, right? Whether it be human connection or feeling part of a community. Like, we all want to feel part of a community. We all want to feel connected and creative.
Like, there's a higher purpose for you.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this, because obviously it's fun to be like, yes, like, I discovered self-help, it's fun, but there's a way that it could be, like, dangerous, and there's a way to use it in the best possible way. And also, everyone's different. That's the hardest thing. You can't just read a book and it, like, speaks directly to you. Everyone
and
has
even
their own cocktail of issues.
Oh, totally. And you can read the same book 10 years later and be like, oh my God, I never noticed this, and this. Everybody focuses on different things.
So I want to get to some meaty stuff. What happened with this marriage?
I fell in love in New York City with a man who lived in Australia. I don't know how that happened, but it did. I found him on Instagram.
Wait, this is 90 Day Fiancé.
Yeah, I was on the show. No one was recording us, but it happened. It literally almost, it's not far off. I mean, the timing, we got engaged after 4.5 months, but it was kind of one of those things where they actually talked about this on The Bachelorette last night, where you know when you know, you know when you know. So yeah. I saw him, and within seconds, I was like, oh, that's the man I'm going to marry. And I never had that happen before. It was just like, well, I don't know. We met. It was like a dream come true.
I get it. I get it. I already get it.
Well, and he was just so present and like hot and like an accent, like, leave me alone. I don't, yeah. You can't, whatever.
I've gone down that path before. From my experience, I think Australians are so sexy, so hot, almost dreamlike. But they'll ruin your life.
They will ruin your life. That is not.
What did, like, your parents think?
I was engaged with an Australian while another Australian was trying to confess his love and proposal to me.
You're like big enough two Australians.
I don't know what's going on, but here's what the first Australian was not really Australian. He was Scottish, and he just happened to live in Australia. So I mean, he's not like full blood Australian. I don't even know. Yeah. Anyway, long story short, we had the wedding of our dreams, and it was beautiful. And he had my name tattooed across his chest.
Oh,
like,
my God!
We were like the couple, the power couple.
How many months until you had the wedding day? Since you met?
So we met November 1st, 2017, and the wedding was on July 14th, 2019.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it was a quick engagement, and then you took your time, planned the most beautiful wedding of your dreams.
Mm-hmm. I had 3 wedding dresses.
Oh my God.
Not because I'm extra, but because they gave them to me. And I was like, well, I'm going to wear all of them, I guess.
Oh my God.
And they were all like, each had their own little, like, the wedding dress that I wore was like my dream wedding dress. And then I was like, okay, cool. Now it's time for the reception dress, which was kind of this like lush pink dress. Mm-hmm. And then right at the end, I slipped into something a lot more comfortable that was still a white, beautiful dress. And mm-hmm. it was a great
this
wedding.
This is also at the height of your like exposure and social media's thriving for you.
Right. And so like companies were like, here, free, here, take this. And so we had a lot of it sponsored, which I'm so grateful for, not only because everything crashed down, and that would have been he treated me like an absolute queen. Like, okay. People would see us and they'd be like, oh my God, you guys dance the same, Manon, you met your match, like, he's obsessed with you, you love him, this is beautiful. Yeah, get your blanket, get comfortable.
Oh, I'm like getting ready for this story. I got my snacks.
Get your popcorn, your M&Ms, drizzle the M&Ms in the popcorn.
Yes.
And a week, so we moved into this new house that I bought for us like 5 days before the wedding on Weddington Street, which is just interesting.
Mm-hmm. You're planning your life out. It sounds like you're in marital bliss.
Oh, yeah. We had our kids' names. We're going to have 2 kids. We
Did
had
you
their
have
names.
A pet together?
No.
Okay.
Why'd I say it like now? I said it like that because the pet comes later
I just had a psychic sense there was an animal involved, but continue.
Yeah, well, yours good. I just got my Akashic Records certification. Do you know what that is?
No.
It's kind of like a psychic reading thing. Anyway, we'll talk about
that
later.
That's fine. Yes.
I didn't see this coming, so clearly I'm not that good. a month after the wedding, I got the wedding photos. And they were gorgeous. And I was like, oh my God, these are everything. They're like everything I've ever wanted. And then my best friend asks me to go to coffee with him and his girlfriend. So I go, and he basically shows me 20 screenshots of my husband sending nudes and naked photos and naked videos and saying really unkind things about his new wife to a random strange girl. And like saying things like, Manon's nothing, she's useless, I'm not going to be with her forever, that's for sure, you're my true queen, I love you, I always have, I always will. And naked videos and photos of him in the shower. Like, So I'm looking at these screenshots and I'm going, wait, what? What? Like everything in my world turned upside down because I have to tell you, this man, we were together every second of every day.
Yeah.
He was your best along. Friend. He was my best friend. We got along perfectly. Like, sure, there was some heaviness and like we tried marriage. So like, it's not easy to be like, okay, now we're getting married. Like you have to grow and get uncomfortable. You have to get comfortable with the things that made you uncomfortable.
Was your sex life good?
It was okay. Yeah. It started off great, but it didn't end great. Like there was some, like, you know what's, so I later found out, so he admitted the whole thing, blah, blah, blah. We went to 3 months of therapy. You know, I didn't trust the guy because I later found out that he was behaving like this almost the entire relationship and I didn't know it.
When you confronted him, what did he say?
He said, he went to the floor and cried and said, I did it. I'm so sorry, but it was never in person. It's just in my head. It's fantasy. It's not. He doesn't really know the difference between fantasy and reality. And so he has this secret world that he talks to many women and does this. And I had no idea because I'd never thought to check his phone. I'm not that kind of person.
Also, if he's living this double life, it's easy for him to like really be in one with you and then out of it. Because he's like not even making it real in his head when it's
yeah.
like, it's emotional, severe emotional cheating.
Severely. And not only that, you know what hurt me the most was the stuff he was saying about me, because yeah. if it was just sexual and it was just like a couple of times yeah. and then I found out, I feel like we could have made it past that because
yeah,
I
why did
been
he
like,
have to come at you?
Like, why, yeah, why bring me into it? That's yeah. so weird. And I think the reason is, well, what he said was he had to make me small to make himself feel bigger, because the girls like would leave and be like, well, no, you're married. And so he'd have to be like, well, no, not really. Like, she's nothing, in order for them to stay. But I don't know what woman was like. Like, some of these women are confusing to me, that they would go, they would see that he's publicly married and in love, and he would be like, I have my soulmate and my one, and she's the best woman I've ever known. And they're, you know, like, they're both, in my opinion, shitty people at that point.
So,
or yeah. highly sick is a better term. Is like, yeah. They're very sick. And like,
well, they're clearly going for unavailable or emotionally unavailable men of some kind of fantasy that is a high to them. You go to therapy. Your world must be crashing in your head, and you probably are lying to yourself in some way because it's too hard to face that reality that this man, who you thought is your soulmate, is a monster.
Yeah, I was definitely lying to myself. That was my lesson. My lesson was, dude, like the trusting. I was way too trusting. I was believing his words. He had his linguistic power, his mm-hmm. language, and the way that he would say things with such intensity and like absoluteness mm-hmm. really almost, I allowed that to dictate my feelings rather than my gut. Yeah. So there were a few times, like, right, the sex, right? Mm-hmm. So like later in the relationship, in the beginning, it was like sex, great, feels amazing, connection. And then there were times towards the end where my body was not open to him. It was like literally like, but I would allow it. But in my mind, I was like, I think I have issues. And so I would go to these feminine workshops because I thought I was the problem, when really my body picked up that he was a liar and was like, no, you are not going to procreate with this man, because the body is so smart. The body yes. knows way more than our mind.
If your mind doesn't tell you, your body will.
Your body will, like, listen to that body. And I wasn't listening. I was listening to his words rather than my body going, dude, something's off.
I think a lot of girls, when they find out their partner cheats, they can't have sex with them. And they think it's like, oh, I need to like work on myself. No, no, no. You're not ready, because you are still not trustworthy of him and you don't want to give yourself to him. And yeah, it's not an issue with you. It's just a valid emotional and physical response.
Energy doesn't lie. The body doesn't lie. People lie.
You felt his energy, and his energy was toxic, and you didn't want that toxicity.
Ooh, yeah, and then I wrote my book, and I wasn't going, you know, I was quiet about everything for a year, almost a year, like 10 months or whatever. And people were like, where is he? Like, why isn't he in your post?
Yeah,
and
I just had to, like, in the public eye, we forget about all of this, where you guys had a full social media wedding.
Yeah.
People.
Yeah.
I know, because you had to post about the brands that they gave you stuff. So, like, people were invested in this shit.
Yeah, they were like, where is he? Like, you guys are our dream couple. You're our model couple. All of
these
things.
You're a fairy tale for people.
And I don't know why I went to therapy. I think I did because, you know, everybody in my life was like, man, and run. This is too soon to be. Mm-hmm. You just got, like, run. Yeah. Just run. He's like, do yourself a favor. And I just couldn't because I loved him so much. And I was like, but I married him. And I just had to at least give it everything I had so that when I did walk away, I felt complete. And
how long did that take?
It was a 3-month therapy experience. We weren't living together or anything like that, so we weren't like an actual couple. But once therapy started, I think around September 1st, and then we didn't start therapy until like mid-October. So for that first month and a half, we didn't see each other, and we weren't really speaking. He said he was working on himself, and so then we finally went to therapy, and for 3 months, and the therapist would suggest stuff and he wouldn't really take it seriously. He said he was, but his actions showed otherwise. And, you know, I caught him a couple of other times in some lies, and I was like, okay, I'm done. Yeah. Like if you're still doing this after everything, I have to walk away now. And it was really hard. It was really hard because I didn't see it the way that a lot of other people saw it. I saw a little boy in pain who needed attention and who was really sick inside and was suffering. And I wanted to comfort him. Yep. But I couldn't. I was doing it at the expense of my own happiness.
Yeah, it's almost a form of self-hate to be like, my emotions, I don't care. I will be here for you regardless of how much pain you cause me, because I'm used to pain. I always have pain, but I will try to fix you or help you. And like,
yeah,
you can't fix people.
Well, yeah. And it was like, and I had to really ask myself, but I understand that I can be there for him and I can separate the two, and I'll be an angel in his life or whatever and help him grieve his life. And I'm also not God, so I can't actually do that as much as I think I can. And the other thing was, okay, let's say we do move past it. You know, the times that we were spending together, every time his phone would go off, I would get this shitty feeling in my stomach. And I was like, oh, I don't want to live like this. I actually don't want to live like this. Like, even if we do make it through, how long is this feeling going to last where I'm constantly wondering who he's texting? I don't want to live like this. And so that's when the self-love came for me, where I was like, oh, I actually don't want to have this.
It must be actually so empowering that you left. During that hard time, though, did you ever get the urge to drink and just be like, I need to fucking black out?
Oddly enough, I didn't. That's the weirdest part. Like, I drink.
You're like, I have enough issues right now. I don't need to get back into that game.
No, I was just like, I need to feel all this, because I was like, I needed to cry. I needed to feel. I needed to be with my friends and family. Mm. I think I get the urge to drink when I get bored. Not when things get bad.
Yeah, there's a bazillion things going on that you could stress about. Why know that?
when things get good and I'm like, ooh, life's fun or boring, that's when I'm like, ooh, I want wine.
Yeah. Like, I joke, like, when people were like, I'm drinking so much during and like bored during quarantine, I'm like, there's so many things to be depressed about right now. How are you do you have time to just drink and not care?
Oh yeah, alcohol sales are up like 50%.
But you're also a very goofy, hilarious, successful female comic. As a girl about town when you were dating, how did men receive that? Do you think he was a good partner? Because he mentioned like he wanted to make you small. Did you feel like he was the right guy to date you, considering, like, did you think it was a good emotional match?
Yeah, I did.
In the past, had you found that? Because sometimes, like, funny girls dating, finding the right guy is hard when you're a funny girl.
Yes, that's true. I've gotten really lucky. I've had great partners in the past where either they've been really funny and we've been able to play off of each other,
yeah,
or they find me entertaining regardless and we have a deeper connection some other yes. way. I will say with this one, this was a more deep, deep, deep spiritual connection where I felt like we had past lives together. So the humor, it didn't start off humorous. We kind of built our own little sense of humor. Now looking back, I see that like he didn't embrace my comedy as much as I think he would have if he had been free in his life. Because there were moments where he was laughing. And I will say that we laughed a lot more after he came clean about what he did because he was free. People don't laugh. If people are mad at themselves, they're not going to laugh in the world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, you can't loosely, if you're dealing with lies or you're filtering everything you do or you're paranoid about something, you cannot just be loose to have a mouth orgasm.
Exactly.
Which is laughter.
Totally.
It's like you can't orgasm when you're in your head with your vagina.
You can't. Yeah, and so I always found that interesting. I was like, I'm so funny, and he's not like laughing that much, and I wonder why. And I just always thought, well, he had a hard childhood and he's having a hard time on the planet. Like he had a lot of stuff to deal with, and I wanted to be the person to like guide him to the light or whatever. And once everything kind of came out, he had an easier laugh and we laughed more, and so I always found that interesting. I get sad, I cry every month, but I don't talk to him anymore. We don't speak.
No.
I grieved a lot of my feelings in front of him, if that makes sense. And so, because he would always be like early on, he'd be like, give me your pain. Let me have it. Don't take this out on anybody else. I'm the one that deserves this. And so like he would hold the space for me while I would like kick and scream and cry and process the pain that, you know, he inflicted. And then I took time and took space, and now we don't talk anymore. And that's because the book came out and he was pretty upset about that, even though I gave him forewarning. I said, listen, I want you to know my book's coming out. There is a chapter where I disclose what happened. And then since then he decided to, you know, change his
number,
not
talk
to me.
Why did you choose to do that chapter?
What are you talking about? I had to. Like for me to keep this in would be just to protect him.
Yep.
It's like protect him.
Or protect so many possible people.
Or like, yeah, all the women that have, yeah, all the women that have messaged me being like, this happened, it's like beyond what the purpose is. Like, this was absolutely supposed to happen to me so that I could share it and be honest. And it's only helped me connect with a whole new audience of people, relate to so many more people on the planet. I didn't really relate to being cheated on. Like, when people would talk about it, it kind of went over my head. I was just like, I don't know what that is. Like I tried to like be like, yeah, that sucks, but I didn't really get it. And I feel like now I get the pain and the trust and like how you really have to trust your partner if you're going to be with them. Like once the trust is broken, where's the foundation?
What I love about this book, it's called Funny How It Works Out. And you basically, you tell all these stories and you help people find lessons in their own journeys to grow from their past, manifest their best lives. I cannot wait to read this book. You guys have to buy it. You also talk about like goal setting and manifesting. I want to shift more into your career because you are crushing it and you have been crushing it for years in a world where there's trends and people have hot moments, and you have really solidified like a place for yourself online as a fucking hilarious female content creator. Do you have any advice for goal setting and manifestation for people?
Well, thank you for saying all that. Yeah, I figured at the back of the book to just put a few like 30 lessons and like how to just get out of yourself. Basically, like, so to get moving into goal setting, a lot of it comes with writing stuff down. I know it seems simple, but unless we visually see it on paper, it's probably, unless you're just some superstar and you're like, I can just achieve my goals regardless in my head. It really helps to write stuff down, to put a date to it, to number it in order of importance, and so that you can actually, so your unconscious mind can visually see and make it happen and come to you. So that's been very powerful, is to, you know, give it a date when, so it's like, it's not like what's a goal?
Well, it's like, yeah, I'm going to pass my driver's test.
Great. By when? Right? Cause it's like giving it a date makes it more tangible and more real.
And then it starts becoming a manifestation. Cause then you're like, by this time I'll see myself driving a car and I envision it and it's going to happen and I will be picking up my mom at the airport when she needs me and it becomes like just a reality in your subconscious. Yeah.
And you can reverse engineer it by going, okay, so I just gave myself 1 month. So now what do I need to do in those 30 days to do it? Okay, I need to read this many pages. How many pages a day? If this book is 60 pages, okay, that's, I don't even know, 2 pages a day. So like it starts becoming real and more tangible to attract it. Yeah, because if the unconscious mind is picturing it happening, mm-hmm. right? The unconscious mind doesn't know the difference between reality and fantasy. And so picturing it is basically telling your cells and your body that it is happening and you can make it happen a lot easier when you visualize it than when you just like, than when not visualizing it.
I love
it.
That so much. What have you personally manifested that's really worked?
Well, I did manifest the dream wedding and that experience for sure. Mm-hmm. I didn't manifest specifically enough. I forgot the whole part
about him with me.
Well, you know what's interesting is I always had my values in guys. Like I manifested to a certain extent my, I don't know, dream guy, dream wedding, dream scenario. Like I did want an accent, I guess. I didn't know mm-hmm. this. Like I didn't write down everything, but honesty was never on that list because I never, that
it was almost assumed.
Yeah, it was assumed. I was like, well, of course, they'll be honest. Like, that's, I don't care about that. Like, because I never valued it. Now that's at the top of my list. You know what I mean? And so, like, you have to get really, really specific because the world will bring to you exactly what you ask for and make sure you leave nothing out. It almost reminds me of that movie Bedazzled when he has like a really small small penis. And then he's like, she's like, well, I didn't know I had to ask for that. I manifested the book, the podcast, the house that I'm in.
How is post-divorce Manon different than pre-divorce Manon in terms of relationships, career? I know it was quick, but you went through a lot of trauma.
I'm actually happier now. I feel like there's a part of me that's very free. Like the fact that just like talking about like, I've always was in comedy and now I feel like I am in a whole other world of comedy and being able to get vulnerable. And it feels like I've stepped into who I really am. And I'm just a lot more, I feel freer in the world. I feel free to be messy.
Yes.
As weird as this is, I feel like my next relationship, I don't have those boxes where it's like, these are the goals, is to get married and to have a house and to have kids. Like, I'm at the point now where I'm like, I don't care. I just want to enjoy. I just want to love being around the person and have a freedom and playful life. And I don't have that. It's almost like there's a weight off and a pressure off to accomplish those things, if that makes sense. Because it was. Yeah. I always was dreaming about my wedding. Like, I was always like,
checking the boxes.
Yeah. And so now I feel like there's, who cares? It's, you know, like not in a bitter way, but it doesn't really guarantee anything. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's really bitter, but
no, it does. It doesn't equate to happiness is what you realized.
No.
Do you deal with anxiety, depression, that kind of stuff?
Yeah. But I like to like reframe those words. So
tell me.
So I got certified as a neurolinguistic programming practitioner in 2013 and then my master prac in 2015. So I'm all about language and using language. And so I know that those are two diagnosable things that people get, but I like to say like I'm having a sad day rather than I am depressed, because then my unconscious mind will hear that and start to manifest me being depressed as like a label. So I don't love labels. So I like to allow every moment to show me and to reveal something new. So if I'm feeling anxious, I like to reframe it and say like I'm excited, or rather than nervous, I like to say excited. And I like to take it as the day comes. So like, because I also think it's really powerful to say I used to be. So to speak in past tense, because our unconscious mind is like a 5-year-old and it's very literal and it's always listening. So if I say I am depressed, it's going to hear me and go, okay, we'll give you more of this depressed. But if I say, oh, I was feeling depressed, even if it is a second ago, it's still the past. Yeah. So when I say I was feeling depressed, what it allows is for my future to be different. It goes, okay, well, if you were now, what's the possibility of the future? And so speaking in past tense is very, very powerful. It's how I overcame my overeating issue. I used to binge eat a lot and just like, you know, eat five. If I was having any feelings, I'd be like, okay, it's time to go to the donut store. And I'd buy like five donuts and just eat and feel sick and whatever. And so one of the things I did was I started saying, I used to overeat. I used to binge. Now, moving forward, I eat a perfect amount. Yeah. And so the word now is very powerful.
Yes. So oh like, my gosh. Yeah. Because the words you tell yourself are so powerful. I played tennis and they always said like, if you're about to serve and you think, please don't double fault, don't double fault. Your brain just hears double fault and you will.
Because the word, yeah, the unconscious mind doesn't know the word don't. So you say, don't worry, don't cross the street, don't look, don't fall, like you're going to fall. So you have to switch it into.
Instead, it's like, I'm going to hit an ace. I'm going to hit a good serve.
That's right.
And
that's positivity. Right.
And I mean, the biggest thing, the reason I started Burning Hell and the biggest thing that's helped me in my entire life is just how I talk to myself. So it's so cool that you studied. What were the things you did and what it, that you studied and what was like the purpose of it? What made you do it?
What made me do it was that this woman led me in like a hypnosis, and I noticed like the 30 days following, I felt joy. Like I was waking up feeling joyful rather than waking up feeling like frustrated and like sad. And then I just took her course at Clarity Institute, and I realized how in my way I was and how defeated I was. And I thought, if I can clear all this up, who knows what I can achieve, and who knows what people I can help too, because people are programming each other all the damn time. So if I can be in the world and be like, and your immune system is healing and it's stronger than ever, and gosh, you are looking younger every day in every way, people are going to be like I'm going to leave people better than when I found them without them even knowing it. Like, yeah, they might go, huh, that was weird, but I don't care, because I can infect people with love and goodness rather than with fear, which is what a lot of people are unconsciously doing. Even when they say the word you, and they're like, you know, when you eat a box of donuts and you're like, what? No, but now I'm picturing it. Damn it. You know what I mean? And so people refer to you rather than saying me. And like, when we take responsibility and say, when I do this, it allows them to be where they're at, and you're not programming them negatively.
And what is the program called again?
Neuro-linguistic programming.
Wow. So it's like
NLP.
It's kind of a form of hypnosis, but understanding like how the mind receives words.
Yeah. Hypnosis is basically a relaxed state of using NLP. So it's we get the most in our unconscious mind when we're relaxed and in a hypnotic state, then we can, that's how you really like talk to the unconscious mind. Is in that relaxed state. So like you're being heavily programmed when you're watching TV.
Yes.
Or if you're, you know, relaxing.
It's going like when you first wake up and your brain is clear and your thoughts aren't just racing each other yet.
Yeah.
I feel like I've learned so much. I feel like you've been so open with me and you are such a fascinating individual. Like I actually am leaving this podcast rethinking a lot of things.
Aww.
I want to play a final game with you to get a little darker. It's called the Seven Deadly Sins.
Ooh.
Seven Deadly Sins.
What are you greedy about?
Money. I always want to make money. Meaning like even if it's like renting my car on an app and making I'm like, ooh, I just made $150. Like literally I was just talking to my friend and my mom and we were joking. I was like, oh my God, my favorite toy as a kid was a cash register. What is wrong with me? Like I just always love numbers.
Cha-ching. You're like, that's all I want to hear all day.
I just, even if it's like, oh, I just made $5 for this. Like I love numbers and money. It's weird.
But what's funny is I don't know when you started Vine, but like putting all your time into Vine at first probably didn't see immediate like monetary.
No, I had value. A bad manager for like 6 months who took my money. I was making nothing. Like, yeah. It was really bad. Like I was undervalued quite a bit. So it's weird. I haven't felt worthy of money. Mm-hmm. I just like numbers and I liked making it's really strange.
But it's so funny. Money is actually so mental and like the manifestation of money. Mm-hmm. And I hear people talk about like, even like the more you spend, the more like the idea of abundance, the more you spend, the more you can make, and just like, but really as women, us believing like I am worthy and I am valued. And sometimes it takes some success initially to make you feel it, but you got to start somewhere. And yeah. I just am fascinated by how an app like Vine, where you're putting your talents into for free, has escalated you into such a career where you have so many streams of revenue. It's yeah. fucking awesome. Who are you envious of?
People that are free in the world, doing their passion, getting paid millions. So like, probably Kristen Wiig or like some of my favorite actors that are like on SNL and people that are just on that next level, I guess. But it's interesting. My insides are comparing to their outsides. So yes. It's hard to say envious of, I guess.
Or like the idea, I guess it's kind of the idea of them that you're thinking of.
I'm envious of little kids because they get to have their childhood. That's who I'm really envious of. That didn't even feel right saying, well, like actors, because I don't know what their experience is. I'm just comparing. But like, I'm envious of the 4-year-old girl that's spinning around with her dress up going, I want to be that girl so badly.
Do you miss your childhood?
Yeah. I love being a kid. That's always what I'm trying to get back to anyway with my videos. It's just like, I just want to goof off and play and have not a care in the world and feel that warmth at night where I'm safe.
Whenever I lose myself, I always think like, what would like 6-year-old Hannah do? Aww. And because that is like your, before you were affected by everything, by this dark, dark, dark world we live in.
I know.
What are you gluttonous about?
Cookies, like sweets.
Mm. So yeah, you had a sweet ass tooth.
Yeah, from day one. I still have it. I have to have something sweet after every meal. And I can't function until, like, I can't focus. It's a problem.
So you used
I used to have a problem. Now moving forward, I'm able to not have sweets. Positive? I used to love a good sweets. Now I just, it's weird. I have like water and I'm fine. I'm content.
I love water. I overindulge in water. I can't get enough. You used to have like a binge emotional eating thing. Do you feel like now you have a better balance? Or have you had to kind of like restrict yourself?
No, I don't restrict myself. I let myself, like on my birthday, I had carrot cake and I had a piece of carrot cake every day since my birthday last weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I do not restrict. I had to go into my unconscious mind and heal. And I had to do this exercise. I had it done on me to work on the all or nothing mentality. So I used to think, right? And that trickled into my alcohol. So like it was either 10 drinks or nothing. So it's either 10 cookies or nothing. It's either the whole cake or nothing, which obviously was a horrible way to live.
And
so
why do
I
think you did that?
I think I modeled either my parents or I don't know what happened with my unconscious. It was something that my unconscious mind did to make me feel comfort in the world and maybe to feel protected. I think it was a program running, and now I'm on a new program, which is like I feel complete and safe with just one cookie, like,
and
or
you
nothing.
Trust that you're not gonna like lose fucking go ape shit and eat the whole bakery, buy the bakery, and start working there and eating the whole time instead of selling food.
No, I don't want the whole. Yeah, like literally, my body just got sick of thinking about that when it used to be like, yes, more.
Yeah, a lot is like just that, like that calmness and trust of like, you know, just having one cookie might.
Hypnosis works because nobody wants to restrict. It's the worst thing in the world because it's like if you restrict, then you're gonna binge because the life is all about balance. And so I suggest for anyone that has an overeating issue, an overdrinking issue, go to a hypnotist, a good hypnotist. I'm telling you, it will work. Sounds like too easy to be true, but I suffered from this for 26 years of like being obsessed with how much I was going to eat and when I was going to eat. And I was never a restrictor. I was never someone that's like, I can't eat for 4 days. Like, no, I would binge and I would feel sick and I'd be like, well, I can't help it. And then I got hypnotized, and I'm telling you, it changed everything to the point where like, I remember my teacher would be like, so what's different? And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, well, have you been around cookies lately? I was like, I guess I had one. I can't even, what are you talking about cookie? Like, I didn't even know I had an issue before until she was like, remember when you used to binge? And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Cause binging is this preconceived notions of like, I need 10. And if you don't go in saying I need 10, in your head 3 could be a lot. Like, you're just making up something to obsess about that is something that doesn't have to be like a goal. It's almost like how I'm like obsessed with like finishing what's on my plate. It's like, what if you weren't?
That's a great
I'm obsessed
that's
with
great.
I need to finish it. Like, I'm like, if it's in front of me, it's getting finished. And that isn't a thing.
Oh my God, how I want that. I want that. I want that so badly. I'm the opposite. I'm like, let it be unfinished. That's fine. I need that right now. Let me finish it.
One bite. And I'm like, that's just
Oh, you mean food.
Food.
Oh, I thought you meant like tasks.
Oh.
I was like, that's a great
I love,
problem
I love you
to
were
have.
Just in productive thinking. You're like, oh, you want to cross everything off your list? Yes. I love crossing shit off
the
list.
I forgot
but
about
anyway,
food.
When was the last... I know, you've been hypnotized to the point you're not even... I'm thinking about food 24/7. When was the last time you experienced extreme wrath or anger?
When do you think? When I checked the dude's phone and saw that he was still telling girls that he loved them and he always will, I went, and this was a
Jesus
month after it all happened,
Christ.
I got so angry. I screamed bloody murder. You know when you scare yourself screaming? I don't know if you've ever had that. But I was like, oh, I didn't know I could ever sound like that. This is horrifying. And then I spit on him.
Oh, I love that for you.
It came out, my mouth got saliva, and then I spit on his gray sweater.
I'm kind of understanding what you mean where he was sick. He clearly was an addict of some kind.
Yeah.
But at some point, you have to stop with the empathy for him and have some empathy for yourself.
Oh, 100%. I was like, you know what? I'm now doing myself a disservice by engaging with a sick person. Mm-hmm. So I'm either sick or I have to do the loving thing to myself and allow him to have his experience but not be his guide or God or whatever it is, because clearly I could not fix. There was nothing I could have done because I tried and it didn't work, so whatever.
Nope.
Let it go.
When was the last time you were a sloth, so like had a really lazy day? Because you have a podcast, you have books coming out, you're doing a bazillion videos, who knows what other projects you're doing with acting and stuff. Do you ever just do nothing?
I'm a sloth every day. I have to tell you, like, this is what this 21-year-old guy was telling me. He's like, man, and you don't do anything. You're lazy. And I was like, I will accomplish stuff, sure, but it's not easy. I'm not up and at him like, okay, and I'm ready to take the day. I chill a lot of the time. And I hurry up and chill. Like, I'm like, I got to get home so I can just rest on the couch. So I would like to say a lot of the days...
I love
Maybe
that.
I should state this in the past. I used to be lazy. Now moving forward, I'm productive. I rest a lot. I really do. I take a lot of lazy days, especially when my mom's in town. Oh my God. That's all we do is sit on the couch and have coffee.
Oh, I love it. Like, you're about to need coffee to do something, but you need coffee to not do anything for the rest of the
exactly.
day.
Exactly. Oh, yep. Story of my life.
When was the last time you let your pride get in the way of something?
I mean, sometimes brands will reach out and it's like, I'm like, no, I don't know my acting. I had a conversation with my agents and managers yesterday and I didn't act prideful, but in my mind, I was very prideful. Like, this is bullshit. What are we doing here? Mm-hmm. What are you guys doing for me? But I didn't say that. I was just like, okay, I'll send you some new headshots, as if that's going to change everything.
Yeah, it's a thin line being like, I deserve better. And just being like, is this my ego talking?
I still feel, I'm not so much prideful. I'm more on the, I heavily was all the way on the, I don't deserve anything. To now I occasionally will still feel undeserving of, work to feel that way. I have to work to feel prideful.
When you hit a billion loops on Vine, did you feel worthy of the billion loops?
I just never felt it was good enough. I was comparing it to the person who had 10 million loops. So no, I still feel like I'm not, I still compare and despair my 688,000 or million on Facebook to, I think I should have 10 million followers like everybody else I know, but I don't. And so poor me, I get really self-pity about it.
In comparison, comparison is the root of a lot of unhappiness, especially.
Yeah, so I have to like work
game.
To be grateful. I have to be like, I'm grateful that anybody is listening. Hold on, Manon. Let me right size. There's a lot of people that don't have any followers and that would dream of that. So let me just humble and be grateful. But I get really LA pissy world. About it.
You probably in the elevator and you and like you, everyone you know is doing the same game as you.
Yeah, they are. And they're all ahead of me. Damn it. But I wrote a book. It's fine. And I my point, it's like they're ahead of me numbers wise, but I can't always look at the numbers. I just love numbers. And so I can't help but look at the numbers and let it determine how successful or well I'm doing. So that's why I've become obsessed with spiritual and self-help, because I want to feel lovable and worthy and good in the world, regardless of the numbers.
When was the last time, final one, you lusted over someone?
Ooh, you know who I thought was really hot? The guy from Emily in Paris.
Oh, I didn't watch it, but I saw the clips.
That guy is so hot.
You love an accent.
I don't care about accents anymore. I have resentment at accents. I just thought he was really hot, and I just liked the way he looked at her. Lusted at someone. You know, the guy that they're in my book, I write about this guy who, when I was engaged, we got lunch, and he like laid out everything that he could provide me. He basically said, I know you're engaged, but I wanted to let you know, if you decide not to move forward with him, what I can provide you. I can provide you travel. I could take care of you if you didn't want to work. I know you're a working woman, but if you didn't want to or you couldn't, I could take care of you. And I just sat across from him and like stared. And at that point, I don't know if it was lust, but it was just like, it's what every woman wants to hear, I feel, is just like, the way he was just proposed, but he wasn't making a move. He never made a pass at me. He was just like laying out his feelings and what he could provide. And I just got to witness it. And it was just so sexy.
Where is he
but
now?
But I immediately walked away and called my husband. I was like, this guy, I had to be honest.
Yeah.
Cause I couldn't just like keep that to myself. And obviously he didn't like it. And then they had a conversation. It was weird, but it's all in the
you
book.
You don't like other people get involved. Okay. Well, where is that guy now?
He's in Australia.
Interesting. Wait for book number two to see how it plays out.
I'm pissed off that I never went with that guy and that I stayed with a pathological liar instead. Do you know how pissed off I am about that? I'm so angry.
You could still reach out to that guy.
No, it's too late.
Are you single now?
I'm not.
Oh.
I have a secret boyfriend.
I love that.
But I'm not talking about it because I'm trying to do it differently.
I love that. Well, I could see how it could be traumatizing.
Like, I don't want to put it online.
Yeah.
Last time it didn't turn out well. So.
and you had to explain yourself in a book about it. I have two final questions. One is just for me. Do you think me and you met in a past life?
No. Was that evil?
No.
I had to answer, me and you.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think this is our first time meeting.
This is exciting for us.
What do you think? What do you think? We're going
to
say
like
yeah.
I feel like I have to physically be with you, but I do feel like...
I think we have to physically be around each other too.
Yeah. But I do feel good. But that doesn't mean that we had a past life.
That's true. You know, or it's just one. Because sometimes you have multiple. But if you feel good around someone... Because I feel good too.
Okay, we're feeling good.
we're feeling good, and maybe it's one.
I think it might be one. Okay, finally, because I need to get that off my chest. We like to wrap every episode up with just a little piece of advice of what would you tell the little devils that they should do when they're going through hell to cope? Like, what do you do to cope with your hell when you're going through it?
Put on some loud music for 10 minutes. Scream, kick, move your body around, scream into a pillow, allow yourself to cry, hold yourself, get out those emotions. Don't keep that in. It's okay to cry. It's okay to kick and scream. Let it out of your body energetically, dance it out, write everything out, write everything that you're angry about out onto a piece of paper until you get it all out. Don't keep it in.
Not on
it's
Twitter
okay to
or Instagram,
it.
Though. Keep it on your
no,
personal
keep
journal.
No, keep it. Yeah. And then light a fire and burn it or whatever, or just close it for until next time.
I fucking love that. Man, and you're amazing. Where can people follow you? Where can people purchase your stuff? Where can people watch you? Give me all the goods.
On Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, you can find me at Manon Matthews. Or if you want a spiritual side, you can go at Manonfestation. And then my podcast is Serious But Funny, BUTT. And then my book and audiobook is Funny How It Works Out.
Hell yes. Thank you guys so much for coming to Hell, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.